Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CadSource production. In this episode, I chat with Seton Brown, Director of MBA Admissions at the College of Charleston. We discuss higher ed, emotional content, and Charleston, South Carolina. This episode is brought to you by the CadSource brand Podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com. When I was looking through LinkedIn one day, I came across this post. Obviously, I went to the College of Charleston and, you know, following, connected with many people that went there, their alumni that worked there. And randomly, this is how social media can work sometimes, I came across a post and you had made this post and you were talking about a student that was moving to Chicago and that was looking for an opportunity to work at a company in Chicago. And you had made this post and then, you know, obviously saw you're from the College of Charleston. So sure enough, that's just interesting in and of itself. And then I see a little bit more is that you're the director of admissions for the MBA at the College of Charleston. I said, well, there's something there. And before we were hopped on here, we were talking about emotion. And there's an emotional connection when I think about the College of Charleston. And then there's an emotional connection when I think about just content in general. When people are posting things onto, say, LinkedIn or social media, or wherever they might be posting on their website. That hit me because here is this someone who's bringing people into an MBA program at CFC, and they're out there trying to help their students take the next level in their journey and their career, right? And that was from you. And that was just a connection point. And that made me reach out to you and connect more. And then we connected some more. And then we had a conversation and on and on and on. And then here we are talking on this podcast today. There's something though to be said because higher ed, there's a lot of stuff being pushed out there. And no doubt you need to talk about the university, the college, you need to talk about these different things and all that. But there's another aspect of it is if you're going to be posting content and it might as well be genuine, right? And I saw that with you because you're helping your students out. You're helping your MBA, the people that are moving on to the next career. So I just wanted to go on that little tangent because that is how we connected. It was LinkedIn conversations and here we are. And there's a lot going on with that. But I just mostly thought it was fascinating because of a college that I'm very fond of. You have this person out here who's helping connect to the next level of a student's journey. So I've gone on too much, but I just had to start with that. And it's important because you don't see that every day. So anyway, here you are. And just want you to talk a little bit about that as being a director of MBA admissions, why it's so important for you to help the students get to that next level.
Sure. Well, first, if you're not seeing that every day from a program that you're considering, you need to look at another program. I mean, I feel it is my responsibility that even though I might be the admissions director, that I have a role to play in ensuring that these students who are going through our one-year MBA program are able to find that job within 3 months of graduation. That's what we try and guarantee. That's what we hope for. And needless to say, we've done a fairly good job of it. U.S. News and World Report rated us in 2018 as the top in the country for job placement within 3 months of graduation with 100% placement rate. And we've done very well since then as well. But if you're looking at programs and you're not feeling that familial connection with it, then it's time for you to go with your gut and go where you're going to be the happiest, where you can acknowledge that I'm looking at this program and this program and this program. They may be offering me this amount of scholarship dollars or this incredible opportunity. But over here, I'm going to be able to develop a network that is going to go beyond just my program. It's going to help me in my academic and professional pursuits, not only within 3 months of graduation that you're looking for that job, but after that, whether you become an entrepreneur or move out of the Southeast or go internationally, kind of like the connection that you and I had, we're in different locations, but we had something similar as the experience of the College of Charleston education. And I hope that that's one thing that we continue to provide to all of our students, undergraduate or graduate, the opportunity to develop their networks and their connections so that they're part of this larger family and community post-graduation.
Yeah. And you started that off by saying how you see it's your responsibility. And that's amazing to hear, but to play it out, to live it out, I think is what's most important. You hear, whether it's a large company or an institution or, you know, a college for that matter, use these big words. And then when you go and live in that world, you realize those were just words and there's no actions behind it. Well, it's obviously playing out. It's not a surprise. You know, if I, you know, as I read about you and learn a little bit more about you, I saw this award you won while you were in school to College Charleston, Unselfish Contributions to the Student Body and the CFC Community. That's the word. It's unselfish, right? You're out there. Of course, you have means, you have things you have to do, right? And accomplish and that you want to accomplish and you're on your objectives and all that. But you have a way of doing it, of giving. And if you give, especially at a place like a university, well, you better be giving because there's so much to that. So it's not, again, like I said, it's not a surprise that you see that as your responsibility because it seems to be playing out in your career, you know, whether it was in college or post-college. And here you are as a director of an MBA school. So it's interesting, though, because there's a lot of news out there about colleges, the cost of colleges. You talk about MBA and there's issues in with return on investment. That ROI is a big word that's thrown out. And I think there's a lot more to ROI than just, hey, what I spent this much money, how did I get out of it? Sometimes you just cannot measure the experience like you're talking about. But that said, there's a lot out there about it. And I think College of Charleston probably has their own way of explaining this. Students could possibly go into debt, but you've already explained how if you go to this school, you have a top ratio of getting your students placed into a career within the first 3 months, which is obviously a very big deal. But I'm sure you've heard it. I'm sure you've heard the arguments. You read the different papers and the periodicals, and it says, you know, be careful of choosing to go the MBA route. But talk a little bit about the MBA program at the College of Charleston and what your thoughts are around that topic.
Sure. Well, let me share too. I mean, MBA programs nationally and internationally have seen a decline in admissions and applications and enrollments. That's not new. We've been able to see it for a few years. The Graduate Management Admission Council has been sharing that data on a biannual basis for us to review. You mentioned the financial component of it. GMAC had a white paper a little while ago that talked about why are students, especially younger students, not pursuing their MBA degrees or graduate degrees. And for a lot of them, it tends to be that they have pre-existing debt from undergrad. The undergraduate universities, especially public ones, are not receiving the appropriate funding for them to be able to offer merit and need-based aid to the students who need it most so that they can graduate in limited debt, if none at all, for them to be able to pursue a graduate level coursework, whether it be a master's or a PhD. I think it's about, if I remember the paper correctly, it's about 30% of those students have identified that they're being held back by loans from their previous education. So affordability is a huge component of recruitment and enrollments in graduate education. For us, and what GMAC has also said, is that there's actually been an increase and a rise in the number of universities offering one-year programs. One-year programs are great because you're only out of the job market for 1 year. Ours happens to be fairly affordable, coming in right under $30,000 right now. You're only foregoing 1 year's worth of salary, and you're back in a job market where you're earning a significant increase in percentage of the salary that you came in with. So it does that higher return on investment. For us, being a public university, we continue to struggle in the amount of scholarship dollars that we're able to hand out. And even though we are incredibly affordable, and I dare say the most affordable in the country for the most part, it's still a struggle to be able to lure students from other programs because other programs are able to offer a significant amount of scholarship dollars, even though the ROI that they might be seeing might be lower in consideration of a comparison to a College of Charleston. So, yeah, I think that that's just a systemic issue that we have in public education anyway, and that our tax dollars are not funding education as it should. If it were, then we could be putting more students out there with significant funding so that they don't have to graduate in debt. But the ROI tends to be one of the highest considerations for our students and one thing that the college's MBA program certainly pursues.
Well, time's obviously a factor in this because you mentioned the one-year program and they're on the rise. As you said, GMAX, you know, noted that. It's obviously important. And if you're someone who's ready to get going on your career, but you realize you need more time in the academic world, 1 year, it's a lot less, right? It's half of two. So I could see where that would play a role. And like you said, the affordability, it's still, you know, under $30,000. It's still a big number. It's still something you have to think about. But at the same time, compared to other programs, it's less and it's 1 year. Is that the main reason 1 year programs have done well? And then how does, say, a 1 year program compete with the typical MBA programs that have been around for, say, 100, you know, very long time, and they have this brand recognition where now you're taking, you know, university where I believe the MBA program is, for, you know, compared to some of these ones that have been around for a long time, is fairly new. Compared to that, how does that play itself out when you're talking to prospective students about that?
Sure. We require interviews of all of our prospective students, and we ask that question, what is it about our program that you find so attractive? The number one is always Charleston. Yes, of course it is. Charleston's the most incredible city in the nation, so I can certainly understand why they would want to come and spend the next year of their life here. But the second one is the 1 year. And that makes us competitive among some of the more brand-recognized universities across the country. Because in the end, there are plenty of arguments out there if the brand recognition actually gets you an increase in percentage pay, and those more well-known programs are going to say that there is. But I can almost say that there isn't, because in the end, you're earning your master's degree. They're looking for the last three letters at the end of your name, at the top of your resume, to say that you have pursued higher education in such a way because you have a commitment to business and being successful in it, to furthering your knowledge and how to manage or developing your focus in finance or marketing or whatever it may be. The 1 year, I think, is one of the most exciting parts of it, because we are still putting the exact same information that you would get in a two-year program into 1 year. It tends to be about 36 credit hours, even for two-year programs. The only thing different about ours is that you're not getting the internship between the first and the second year. Now, we don't require an internship unless you're in the hospitality revenue management focus area of the degree program. But I can tell you about 2/3 of our 48 students right now all have internships or a job outside of the program. When our dean went out 10 years ago to identify the best practices of different MBA programs around the country, he put a list in front of them and said, all right, rather than focusing on one of these areas and pursuing it wholly and doing just that one thing really well, we're going to focus on all of them and do all of them really well. So two-year programs that offer an international immersion trip, we offer that too. That offer a mentoring program, we offer that as well. Executive coaching, cohort style, focus areas, and we have three in marketing, finance, and revenue management. Those are the sorts of things that you can get at our program just as well as you could get it at a two-year program.
That right there, as far as being able to differentiate yourself right off the bat and understanding what it is you're trying to accomplish and having, right, your dean go out some years ago and identify that this is what we're going to do. You have a vision, and clearly there's a vision with this, with College of Charleston and everything that's around it. And you mentioned the city itself. So, and these conversations I love to bounce around, and we're going to come back to all the different MBA stuff as well. But you mentioned the city because I used to vacation with my family down in the island, Kiwa Island. And I remember being at the airport one day, and sure enough, there's a kiosk. And they said the College of Charleston is this beautiful picture of the university, of the college. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, wait a second, you can go to school here. And we're like, wow. So we looked into it. Well, next thing you know, we're vacationing on there. I love this city. You know, we spend more time outside of the city than we actually do in it. So going to college would still be something I'm really not that familiar with, and certainly living in downtown Charleston. Sure enough, end up at the College of Charleston for 4 years. The city is a draw. I met my wife there, but she is actually from my hometown as well. Our parents were friends. This is a long story, right? Our grandmothers were in the same elementary school. We got to know each other in Charleston, South Carolina, being from Buffalo, New York. It's pretty wild when you think about it, right? That's when we became friends and so on. Her parents fell in love with the city after sight unseen, never seen it before. There's something about that place. And then you're there and you're talking to people when I'm there. And they're like, where are you at school? The College of Charleston. And where is that? It's in Charleston, South Carolina. Oh, okay. So you're in the Southeast.
And community then, college in Charleston.
Yeah. And you know, then the basketball program's coming up. John Kress is leading the way. When I was in school there, that was like their heyday, let's say, of their basketball program. And it was interesting to watch them be put on the map as a result of that. It absolutely had an impact because I know more and more students were coming from the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic. So I had friends from Washington, D.C. area. And they were some of the first students to go down to Charleston, like I was from Western New York. Well, now I'm watching it and I'm seeing people. And then I'm, you know, there's people coming to our house to babysit our kids when they were younger and they saw the College of Charleston flag. They're like, oh my God, that's my first choice. I hope I get in there, right? But there's so much of it goes back to the city and the growth because now people are saying, you've seen it living there. The growth of that place is unbelievable. You know, and the growth of a lot of cities, especially in the Southeast, Charlotte's seen it as well. It's a draw by itself. Add the college, add the MBA program. There's a lot of other reasons to be there along with that. But I want to definitely talk about the city of Charleston and how that has been, you know, how they work together to make it what it is today, but also the challenges that they face with it because you have people from all over, you have traffic. There's only so many places you can build in Charleston because you got water basically all around it.
Right. So the college and Charleston are truly inextricably connected. Like you, I would vacation here as a kid, and you could walk through campus and not really identify that you were on campus. Now walking through, you say, oh, how could people not see that this is a campus? Of course it is. And when you think about its role in the history of the city, the college was founded in 1770. Actually, next week, January 30th, we will be celebrating our 250th anniversary. That was on that day that Lieutenant Governor William Bull recommended to the colonial legislature the development of three schools, one in the upcountry, one in the midcountry, and one in the lowcountry. And the only one that still exists today is the one in the lowcountry, and that happens to be Charleston's College. And we have played a role in the development of the city for the past 250 years. Coincidentally, the city is also celebrating its 350th anniversary in 2020 as well. We have been able to use the city to our advantage in so many different ways. In particular, with the MBA program, it's the amount of industry that's here and the industry that has come here really since what I would call Charleston's second renaissance. And that was all under the leadership of Mayor Joe Riley when he served as mayor for the city for 40 years. But we have companies like Volvo, like BMW in the state. Boeing is here. Google is here. We have a number of logistical firms here, Mediterranean Shipping Company. The South Carolina Port Authority is also here, as well as a number of smaller firms that you may never have heard of, but they have billions of dollars in their portfolio that both our undergraduates and our graduates are working with. With our hospitality revenue management program, it's truly a revenue management program, but it's taught through the lens of hospitality because why wouldn't it be? We're in the number one destination in the country, the top small city in the country is rated by Condé Nast Traveler magazine. So why not use that to our advantage so that students are getting real-world experience while they're in education? And I got here in 2005, and like you'll remember, the city, you didn't really go north of Calhoun Street. It was still kind of a no man's land,
right,
at least for undergraduates. And now here we are 15 years later, and I tell my friends when they ask, you know, is it still the same? It's still Charleston. It may not be exactly what you remember, but it certainly rhymes with it. The development of the city, certainly areas are being gentrified. There's an incredible development with the hospitality industry and the number of hotels that continue to be built in and around the peninsula. Yet, like you mentioned, all of that comes with its own struggles. We have a terrible time with traffic and congestion. Our transportation system has not caught up with it. I think we're getting there. It's just a matter of leadership in the mayor's office and also in city council for us to be able to start to fund and better reroute CARTA, the Charleston Area Regional Transit Authority. In addition to flooding, something that a lot of coastal cities are having to deal with, we just recently completed what was called the Dutch Dialogues. We had a number of people from the Dutch government come in and advise on what we can be doing to protect ourselves while the sea level continues to rise. But what I find most interesting in that all of these conversations, you can always find an alum of the college. You can always find a current student, whether they're an intern or they're working there part-time or they happen to have graduated 15 years ago and they've come back now with their family. There's always going to be a College of Charleston alumnus or alumna in the conversation that will go to prioritize and to benefit the city. Because if there's one thing that we all love, it's Charleston. And what I tell a lot of my students is the number one conversation starter that you're going to have as soon as in an employer setting, or when you're going in to apply for a job, they're going to look at your resume and they're going to say, wow, you spent some time in Charleston. You lived in Charleston. Tell me about that. We love that place.
Right.
Charleston always brings people to conversation.
Yeah, it's a great connector. I love what you said. It rhymes with it. It rhymes with what it used to be. There's no doubt there's a difference, right? Like King Street, you go down King Street, the area you used to go, and it's different, right? It's got a feel like of like an outdoor mall almost. But like you said, now you go north of Calhoun. I mean, I remember being there. You would never go on Spring and Cannon Street. Well, now some of the best restaurants are on Spring and Cannon Street, and you enjoy the walk down the street.
And I lived on Bogard Street, right at Bogard and St. Philip. And I remember when I was moving in, this was 2006, and the Charleston City paper on the front page published new pizza place, De Alessandro's Drive-By Pies. And my mother saw it and said, where are you living? What is this area?
Yeah.
It wasn't that great, honestly. I happened to live in a renovated house, and to the right was a rundown house, and to the left was a rundown house. And I'm sure that they were selling something that they shouldn't have been across the street.
Right.
And now you go up there, and every house has been restored or renovated. Where I had a fraternity brother live at the other end of the corner, which I would never go to because it was just a disgusting apartment, is now an incredible restaurant in town called Chubby Fish, anchored on the other side of Bogard Street, is De Alessandro's. You know, so it's a matter of development in the city, and it's always started with students. That's where they live because it's the cheapest housing, and then the city just kind of follows them. It really is amazing. I was sharing with somebody the other day, I remember King Street north of Calhoun when all the sidewalks were just concrete. There were no streetlights. And while I was a sophomore, they replaced all of the sidewalks. They widened the sidewalks, replaced it with blue slate, and put new light poles all the way down. And that was just such a simple thing, but it encouraged folks to come in and put in new businesses and put in restaurants. And that's really what made King Street grow.
Yeah, you get the feel of it. It's interesting. This last summer I was there. My son went to the College of Charleston soccer camp. And that's just over the Patriots Point.
Yeah, with Coach Lundy?
Yes, absolutely. And loved it. I mean, it was really cool for him to be there. And since I know Charleston, I spent some time there, I have clients there and people that I connect with there. I stayed for a few days and you're just explaining it. Like that walk, which I would take every night and after a meeting or something like that, or having dinner, just walking up and down the street. And it's a lot of people from all over the place. And it includes students and it includes, you know, people vacationing there because like you said, it's the number one place to go for so many people where before it was like, wait, where are you? And no doubt, Charlotte, North Carolina has a lot of that stuff going on in a different way. Charlotte's got land, but they didn't expect this influx. So you see it, it just doesn't bottleneck the same way it would in Charleston. And sometimes you look at Condé Nast or Travel and Leisure or some of these magazines, you're like, they're number one. You're like, stop being number one because so many people know about it. You see Bill Murray. It's like, oh, Charleston's not that great. It's tough coming here. But it is a draw. There is a lot of places, like you said. Now you have the large companies, which I'm assuming, or actually I know, would have a great impact on the college, on the MBA program, on what it is that you're doing. And then there's the alumni base that's there. And the alumni base is also spread out, right? Charlotte, we run into a lot of people here. And you go to Atlanta, Absolutely. Obviously, in Washington, D.C., and Chicago. And it's just continuing to expand out from just being in Charleston, which I think is a big deal. It's funny too, you mentioned North Calhoun Street. I hear the name Calhoun. So I lived in College Lodge, and that's where my future wife lived, and it's on Calhoun Street. So our first dog was named Cece. So for a lot of different reasons, lived in Charleston, Charlotte, College of Charleston. So that was our dog, unfortunately passed away some years ago. Our dog that we got 5 years ago is named Calhoun, and we just got a puppy. And sure enough, this is a small dog now. His name is Clyde. So after Clyde the mascot, so we're still connected
Clyde
to it.
Clyde the cougar.
It's it. And so it's funny because we aren't living there anymore, but we have so much exposure and we're there and we even name our dogs after it, right? So we like
to have fun. Yeah, it's always going to be part of your lives. My hometown is St. Simon's Island in Georgia. And we have this saying that once St. Simon's Sand is in your shoes, you'll come back again and again. And it's very similar to Charleston. I think it's like we talked about at the beginning, it's the emotional connection that you have with a place that keeps it at the forefront of your life. One of my best friends recently had his second child and named him Charleston. I've got plenty of, you mentioned your dogs. I don't know how many Charlie dogs I know, or Trad, or Calhoun, or the list just goes on and on. Or Cooper, that's always a big one.
Cooper's a good one, yep. That's my nephew's name, so we couldn't name our dog Cooper. And it's funny you say Charlie. I should also mention this. So my parents, obviously, they've loved the city, and they're down there quite often. They had a dog named Charleston, Golden Retriever. And it's so, like you said, so much of it is based on that emotional connection. And when you get it, it's hard to explain and you just get it. And even if, like I say, even if I'm not there, if we're not there, we're always thinking about it. It's like you said, it's part of your life. And that's a draw to what you're saying, that this is a reason to come here. This is because you get a become a part of this. And it might only be a year. Right. And that goes fast. And that year is going to go very fast, right? Especially for a student. But there is that connection to it. And you just, that's something. And it's something you want to hold on to. And it's pretty awesome that you have the opportunity to, I mean, I get it. You have to sell the program and all that, but it becomes so much easier to just talk about. That's the perfect marketing, is when you're talking about a place like this with this type of vision and these incredible leaders. And, you know, and we could touch on all different topics. You can go back on what we were just talking about. But a new president comes in, President Xu, and everything you see and read and hear about this is like, this is the type of person you want leading the next, you know, starting off the next 250 years. You've obviously had interaction with him. Talk a little bit about, you know, what it's meant to bring on the new president and what you see going forward.
Absolutely. I'm a big history buff, and so I enjoy learning more about the college and its presidents, where its role has been in history. And in the modern era of the college, what I would say since the 20th century, we've had a few visionary presidents, one of which, Harrison Randolph, who actually came to us from the University of Virginia as a math instructor at the ripe old age of 23 to be president of the college. And of course, that was a different era, but he served almost 50 years as the college's president and is the one who started athletics, started Greek life, started housing folks on campus in dormitories, offering out-of-state scholarships. He saw what the college could be and pursued it. Of course, we honored him with naming what we call the main building at the time is now Randolph Hall at the top of the Cistern Yard. In addition to that, anything Ted touched turned to gold. The city would not have Spoleto Festival USA had it not been for the friendship that Ted Stern developed with Giancarlo Minotti, who was the founder of Spoleto Festival here in the States, him and Mayor Riley. He was also the one that created the graduate school at College of Charleston, moved us from the designation as a college to a university. He was the one that integrated the university and expanded our academic programs as well as the enrollments on campus also. Lee Higdon, who I think was here while you were a student, was also that visionary. He saw the development of a sleepy college and saw what it could be. And the vast majority of the new buildings that we have on campus were developed while he was president here. And yeah, I love George Benson, Glenn McConnell, Steve Osborne as our interim president just last year. We've had some great leaders, but I think that President Xu is going to redevelop who we are as a university. He's going to develop an engineering program. He's going to expand athletics. He's going to increase the amount of funding, and whether it come from the state or from private donors. You know, next week, we have our CFC Day, which is a one-day fundraising campaign that coincides with the college's 250th anniversary. President Hsu has all the workings to be one of those milestone leaders in the college's history. And I expect great things from him. He's only been in office technically since July. And already you're starting to see things redevelop on campus. And he's very honest about things, which is what I appreciate in seeing in a leader and a manager. It's not going to be, the conversation is not going to just stay within the walls of Randolph Hall in the administration. He's going to bring that conversation out to the many faculty and staff that we have on campus, where a lot of times in business, those folks are underappreciated and underpaid and don't feel like they have value or worth in the machine as a whole. President Hsu is very different because even in his first few months of being here, he's been with us at different events. He goes to all the basketball games. He's having conversations with us on what the staff feel to be or needed to be as changes within the administration. And we love him for it. I've never seen a president post so many selfies with people, whether they were students, faculty, or staff. I'm even surprised that the students know who he is. But not only do they know who he is, but they love him. And they like to show that love as well. So I'm very excited to see what will happen during his tenure here.
Well, leadership, we talk about it often. Obviously, leadership's important and having a vision of what that leadership is and then getting out there and helping spread that message. So I've heard, you know, he had open forum or something along those lines at Hall Steakhouse. And, mm-hmm. you know, area business leaders would come in, or just anyone really could come in and have an opportunity to chat with him and talk to them and feel more and more connected to the college. Alex Sanders is another president that.
Oh, the judge.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. So you see that and with so much growth in this area, you absolutely need that type of leadership and vision to take it to that next step. And everything that I see out there is just high praise for him. And with messaging comes, for example, basic things, little things. It's not always like these big announcements. It's you being on this podcast. It's your LinkedIn posts that you make, that you're putting out there. I was actually going back through it again because there's a lot of content out there. And I want to talk a little bit about mm-hmm. that. But there was this video that you made that you were a part of this video. And it was about this. It was about the college and it was about the city of Charleston. It wasn't about one or the other because they're interconnected, like you said. And that video, that's a video you like, you watch that and at least you would want, well, I want the opportunity to continue to learn more about what's going on there. Because that might be something I want to be a part of. What was that video about? Because it looks like you were a part of it. Obviously, you had a video company that was a part of it. Obviously, the narration was incredible. And we talked about it at the beginning. There was a lot of emotion a part of that. That's a big selling point as to this all. But talk to us a little bit about that video. And obviously, we'll put a link to that in the show notes of this podcast. But I want to hear your side of that.
Sure. That video, I'm going to go a little rogue in my conversation with all of this. And for years, I've been asking our marketing office to put together a video similar to that. And I kept getting a commercial. And granted, they were great. The videos that our marketing communications division puts together are exactly what they need to do. But it wasn't what I was looking for. Like you mentioned, I wanted it to be an emotional connection really for anyone being able to watch it. I want it to tug at their heartstrings and yeah, maybe a tear go down their face, whether they be a prospective student, a current student, alum, or the parent of any of those constituency groups. So I was overseeing the development of Accepted Student Weekend, which was a two-day event bringing in accepted students from around the country. We would host about 3,500 people on campus for 48 hours. And at the opening ceremony each year, I wanted to kind of up myself. And so this was really the pinnacle of what I had done, I think. I got permission to go outside of the university to put together what I was looking to do. I had an alum share with me, oh, you should reach out to advise. There are two CFC alumni, Matt Cota and Jake Cottrell. They've been doing great work. They were really kind of at the forefront of drone footage. And so I went over, had a meeting with them. We sat down, decided on the price, and moved forward. Now, I'll tell you, the script on that came with a couple bourbon drinks of me just sitting on my back porch writing it out. And kind of writing what my own experience was like at the college. And as you saw, it's kind of a long video. I mean, 5 minutes. Yep. It was not intended to be a quick 30-second clip that could be played between commercials of local TV stations, you know. And myself and the folks at Vive kind of went back and forth on, you know, is this really appropriate? Should it be this long? And we got it down to 5 minutes. And what they did with just the visuals of it just truly encapsulated the words that we had written down as well. And then the voiceover was Judge Sanders, who you mentioned earlier, who was a former president at the college. And there really is no better voice that could really, that people would be able to identify with the college or with Charleston. And he just, I think you'll agree, he was just perfect for that, just made for that role.
Yeah, the whole thing draws you in, like you were explaining, just the footage, what you wrote and the narration and the college. And, you know, you need the scene, right? You could take the greatest video in the world, but if you're looking at nothing that's special, well, it's, you're going to lose it, right? You're going to lose interest at about 30 seconds and off you go to the next YouTube video, right? And that's what we're dealing with right now. And that's not that, right? This is something that you definitely want to spend some time with. So,
yeah, the video we posted, the college won't post it because they don't believe it to be on brand or showing the correct president and the graduation scene or whatever. So sure, they won't post it. But I posted it on my Facebook initially. And what I remember, I believe at this point, it's garnered over 500,000 views.
Wow.
Now, when people, since I had it on private, I had it on YouTube as well. So that one's got a couple thousand views, but it certainly makes its way around social media. And hopefully people can identify with it and fall in love with the place just like we have.
Yeah. It's talking about content and you said it, like you didn't want a commercial, and that's hard, right? Because there is this emotion to it. And this is why it's so important to curate sometimes your own content. What is your story? What do you believe in? What do you want to share? How do you want to help people out? And you just posting that stuff on LinkedIn. And I mean, you could say, okay, well, let's go find someone who's a director of admissions at an MBA program in a school that's been around for 250 years. Well, a lot of the time you're going to get what you expected. And it's going to be the same mundane stuff. And here's about us. And here's the commercial. And here's the flyer. And here's all, you know, and it's great. And there's nothing necessarily at the end of the day, if you go to that institution, you might get something great out of it. There's more to this. And that's where you come in, and the content that you're sharing, whether it's pictures of you with the students or not even you with the students, of just showcasing the students and helping them get a job in Chicago or whatever it is, or creating a video. There's something there. And that's what we do, right? So we're looking at, it's like, let's pull the true story out of this. What is your story? What do you want to say? Because you understand it. You have a great college. You have a great, you know, you have a great program. You have great students. You have great alumni. It all matters. What is it that you want to truly talk about? And it's not, you can't always nail it with one piece of content. Sometimes you can, but a lot of, in that video obviously does that, but there's more to it, right? Because then you got to get into some of the specifics. The content is what it's all about. I think that's at the core of it, because that allows someone in the middle of the country, let's say, to say, what is going on in Charleston, South Carolina? I need to learn more about it. Or they see it for the seventh time, or someone explains it to her. They have a friend whose kid went to the school and like, oh, I've been hearing about it. Then I saw this video. And then I saw this post of this guy is trying to help his students get a job in Chicago. And there's just something there. And that's why we're so just in love with creating content.
Yeah, that's what kind of our alma mater is, or what it says, loyal sons and daughters. That's an experience of all of us. So right. I don't, you know, it could be creating content on my behalf, mm-hmm. but I'm not alone in this. You know, there are so many other social media posts from faculty and staff on campus that are trying to do the same thing. And, you know, we have the business perspective of this is content and we can get interactions with it. But it's really just our college acting like a family. And I mentioned earlier that I have a responsibility. Yes, I have a responsibility to my program and to try and help that student find a job, because that's going to help us and our rankings and what we report to U.S. News & World Report or Business Week or GMAC or whatever it may be. But we also have a responsibility, you and I, as alumni. Our faculty, they have a responsibility for their programs and to engage students at a completely different level. But as it relates to content, I mean, we're humans. Humans like a story. that's, I mean, from the dawn of time, that's how we expressed ourselves. That's how we explained things, was to put a story behind things. So it's obviously going to be something that we connect with. And so being able to provide those stories out into the public, people have, they have the opportunity to connect with them. Pat Conroy has a great quote, a wonderful Lowcountry writer who has written my favorite books and also speaks a lot to the Charleston lifestyle. He's now passed away, but one of my favorite quotes by him is, "The story left untold, it could be the one that kills you." So why not, for us as members of this community, why not share the story with them so that they can share their own story also?
I'm glad you brought that quote up. It's amazing. And there's so much there. We could spend an entire podcast probably just talking about that quote, right? But you're right. Because, you know, obviously I'm speaking to you, so I'm speaking about what you're doing. But I felt like going back when I left my high school, and no doubt it was very high academics and it was a lot of work and it prepared me for a lot of different things, but I didn't have that. I had experience with friends and certain people, not with the faculty, not with the professors or whoever I was working with. When I got to college and I had the opportunity to connect with them and realizing, wow, I can form a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. I could seek help. I could seek opportunity, whatever that might be. It was with open arms, like every single time, especially if I pushed it a little bit, because, you know, they want, you know, a professor wants their student to be engaged. And if you show that you're engaged, I tell my kids this all the time, is show that you care. Like, you genuinely care. Don't make believe it. If you do care, they're going to want to help you because they want to help you be, you know, do better in whatever it is that you're doing. So there is that. And I could see if they're able to express themselves, which is, you know, so much has happened in the last, say, 10 years or 5 years of the middle person's been cut out. Now you can just go and post it, like you said, on your Facebook page, on your LinkedIn page. You can go share it with a friend while you're grabbing a cup of coffee. You can do these things now that were harder to do and express the story. And I'm sure that the people at the College of Charleston are able to do this, and that would resonate with so many different people. And so it's exciting to be a part of it. And like you said, and that's also the alumni. That's why it's a great opportunity to talk to you. If I can help in some small way, whether it be someone who works at the college or someone who went to the college, I love connecting with students there right now because I just see where they're going. And you never know, we might want to bring someone in here. We're looking for great communicators. We're looking for marketing people. There's so many different things to say, how can we help out in that way? Well, having you on this podcast, I feel like maybe that could help in some small way. I don't know, because at Absolutely. The end of the day, these conversations are what it's all about. And someone might be able to hear you and say, wow, this is Seton. I want to talk to Seton. I want to learn more about what he's thinking about.
Well, and too, as a person, you know, we don't get into higher ed for the money. I can tell you that right now. What we do on a day-to-day basis is work with students, provide the resources for them to be successful. And I think that's a really key thing. Even for our program, whether I was working on the undergraduate side or here in the graduate school, you could have a stellar transcript and maybe not the best GMAT score, but you have this certain grit about you that I think that you're going to be successful in the program. And if you can show that to me, if you can communicate with me and tell me about your story, then I want you here. You don't have to have the best grades in the world to be able to be successful outside of our program. And when you are successful, we want to be able to celebrate that. We want to be able to post it in social media. We want to be able to tell our friends. We want to write an article about you in the alumni magazine. We want everyone to know about your success because you are a product of us. You represent the best things about your alma mater. That's what is important to so many of us, whether it's here at the college or anywhere in higher education, that students are, that they're succeeding, and that we were able to play a small role in that.
Entrepreneurship is a big word, you know, because some people aren't even going to school and they're starting businesses out of high school, right? And there's a lot of different things, and you can, you know,
so many of them.
That's right. So when they come out of an MBA program, obviously a lot of what we talked about is they're getting jobs within 3 months of being at the College of Charleston in their MBA program. Do you see students building their own businesses? Because I believe, you know, you even had students, I saw on your LinkedIn page that I think it was a Salesforce competition that they had created something and they won this competition or placed very high in this competition. Mm-hmm. But as far as the MBA program is concerned and entrepreneurship, is there a connection there?
There certainly is. I mean, so one of the aspects of the program that I like to highlight is our mentorship program. And as we've talked about, people love Charleston. People also love Charleston to retire in. It's a great community where you have everything within walking distance of your home or a short drive. And it could be concerts or arts festivals or wine and food or the Southeastern Wildlife Expo or Bridge Run, whatever it may be. So we have a lot of former C-suite executives who are living here in the city. They maybe get tired of playing golf every day over at Kiowa, and they want to be a part of something. They want to be a part of something larger than themselves that may not necessarily be in the corporate world, so they turn to higher ed. These mentors are advising these students one-on-one, so they don't have multiple people that they're advising. The students tell us what they're looking, or what industry they're looking to go into, what function they're looking to go into post-graduation, and we pair them with one of these either current or retired C-suite executives, and they give them industry insight and provide background and advice. But they also have a network that they're able to introduce them to. A number of students will go on informational interviews with folks in the industry so that they can learn and glean as much as they can. The vast majority of our students are looking to go into a job and then be an entrepreneur later, but that hasn't stopped some of our students from the entrepreneurial spirit being lit, and then they go directly into it post-graduation. And we want to be able to support that as well. So being able to have these mentors that can guide them through that process is a really exciting part of what that mentorship is.
It's a big deal to have mentors. I mean, sometimes we look at our organization and it's a mentorship in many ways of helping people along the way, because I look back to say, the mentors are the people that helps you get to where you are if you utilized it correctly. And the ones that weren't mentors, you always wonder, like, wow, imagine if you ever get into this position and you can mentor somebody else. So I can imagine, you know, retired executives, business leaders, business owners getting back into it. It's a big deal. It just goes to with everything that you've talked about of, you know, helping not just on the academic side. There's so much more to it. But speaking about this and getting into this world, you said, well, I didn't get into it for the money. How did you get into this place? How did you get in the position of leading this program? Because, you know, it's always funny how people get into certain industries and here they are and they're doing great at it.
Sure. So my undergraduate degrees are in business and hospitality, tourism management. Luckily, my parents gave me the gift of gab from an early age. And like my mother, I don't think I've met a stranger, but for her, I mean, she could talk to a brick wall for hours and not know the difference. I hopefully am not that bad. But I was an undergraduate tour guide in Office of Admissions and had a blast with it. There was nothing like being able to talk about the college and share with folks the history of the institution and share my own experience. And I did have an incredible experience. So when I graduated, it was in 2009, so right in the middle of the recession, and there truly were no jobs available or none that really clicked with me that I wanted to pursue. And our director of admissions at the time, Jimmy Foster, shared with me that he wanted to start a new program, what he was dubbing Roadrunners, where they would take young, recently graduated alumni, give them a territory, and go out and recruit. And so I was on a temporary contract and went, I think my original territory was Alabama, Tennessee, Long Island, and New Jersey. You can probably tell from my accent, I'm fairly Southern, as much as I admit to be at least. And I remember going up to Long Island, assuming that it was going to be like my little island back in Georgia, and it certainly was not.
Right.
Going 2 miles was about an hour and a half drive in Long Island. So not a culture shock necessarily, but certainly a learning experience. And after Long Island, where I was just miserable, got into New Jersey and just fell in love with New Jersey. New Jersey was actually the only territory that I had all 7 years that I was in undergraduate admissions. And it coincidentally, it was the most successful as well. When I first started, we maybe got about 100 applications from the state of New Jersey. By the time I left, we were almost at 1,000 applications. And that was 7 years of hard work and recruitment and developing relationships with high schools and students and families and alumni that I was really proud of. But over the years, my responsibilities grew. They moved me from from just being a roadrunner, giving me a full-time position that May, and covered vast majority of the Southeast for a couple of years. And then when we were looking to expand out west, my territory covered New Mexico up and over, except for California, in addition to New Jersey. And I was lucky that all my states increased in application numbers, increased in enrollments. And by the time I left, New Jersey was the largest feeder state to the college outside of South Carolina, followed closely behind Georgia, my home state, which was also part of my territory over the years. But I love the higher education environment. I love getting to talk about the college. It's a sales job in the end, but I don't see it as selling. I really don't. I just talk about the features and benefits of what the university has. And a lot of times I'll compare it to other schools that the student is looking at. And I think I shared with you earlier, it's okay if they decide to come here. It's okay if they decide not to come here. You need to go where you're going to be the person that you were meant to be. And I truly believe that. And after working in undergrad admissions, moved over to development for 2 years in annual giving, and then moved over to the MBA program in December of 2018. And so it's nice being back in the admissions industry, nice being in my undergraduate school of business where I graduated from as well. But I've loved every minute of it. And as I continue to be more involved in the academic environment and loving the bureaucracy of shared governance between the administration and faculty, it's just I found a new passion for it. My parents, long ago, when I was first coming to CFC, gave me a Pat Conroy book, my first one, called The Water is Wide. Hmm. It talks about Pat's experience being a school teacher on the small island in South Carolina, and the lack of funding and attention and accessibility that these students had to a proper education. It was a turning point in my life, even though I didn't realize I wanted to be in education until I was actually in it. And now I try to do the same thing. I mean, accessibility continues to be a huge concern of mine. I think it's important that we look at diverse populations and recruit and work with them, be successful in our program and to be successful graduates as well. You know, I don't think that schools in general are doing enough to secure that. You look at programs around the country that are now removing the SAT or the ACT. They're going test optional because it's widely considered that those tests tend to be biased towards traditionally white males. We need to do a better job in the academy to remove those barriers of entry so that education can be available to everyone.
No, that's well said. And there's a lot in there. One of the things is you dealt with some adversity. I mean, you're coming out of college at probably the wrong time in the last maybe 50 years, 30 years, whatever it might be, to then say, what's the job market? Well, there's not, but you relied on relationships and different connections you had made throughout your years to then lean into that a little bit. And like you said, you didn't even know that that was maybe a possibility. And it's funny too, because I look at my kids and, you know, I try to expose them to these different things because you didn't realize you could do that job or this job. You just hear like the generalizations of like, well, you can go do this work. You can go do that work. It's very specific. It's like, well, there's so much you can do. Like you can work for a college. You can be a professor. You can be, you know, the list goes on. You can be a director of admissions at the College of Charleston, right? There's so much that you can do. And you didn't even realize it until you got into it, that might be what you really like to do. And you helping other students, you said that it's very specific and you help them do that. And just giving them the exposure, right? To maybe even think about it, or you did it and you didn't like it, but at least you tried it and now you know you don't like it. I mean, those are some statements that have been made for a long time, nothing that we're just discovering right now, but there's so much to it because every one of these students and even yourself, you're going through these things for yourself for the first time. So you have to live through the different experiences to then say, oh, I like that, didn't like that. Yeah.
I think that you hit the nail on the head with exposure. I mean, that's the most important thing that any sort of educational institution can provide is exposure to any multitude of things. That in diversity of academia and geography and race, I mean, the list just continues on and on. And that's the only way that we are going to be able to evolve as a society, that you continue to expose people to things that are different than themselves while also exposing them to different opportunities of employment. You know, yes, I was very good at talking to others and building relationships and quote, selling different things. But as I've been in this industry, I've had to also come to learn and expose myself to other facets of it, like enrollment management. You know, for me, you know, and actually really any other industry now, because yeah, higher ed is just as much a business as anything else, we have to data constantly. Big data is our friend. Using CRM like Salesforce is our friend. We've got to be able to maintain these relationships and go to where the people are and share with them what they want to know so that we can expose them to these different opportunities, whether that be in the academy or elsewhere.
So for this program that you're leading, who is it for? Who is the maybe ideal candidate for to have the opportunity to be in this program?
Sure. I mean, this what I love about putting together our cohort is that myself and my colleagues, we get a really diverse group of folks that I think would benefit from our program. So it's a two-way street for us. I want to benefit from them being in the cohort. I want them to be able to benefit. So we will have a number of fifth-year students. The cohort, about 50, you can guess that about a quarter of them will be fifth years. So that means that they've just left their undergraduate degree program and will be coming into ours. The remaining folks, the average age is going to be about 26. So they'll have about 6 to 10 years of experience in the business world. Now, I've had folks that come in with music degrees, landscape architecture degrees, finance and coaching, and arts management, hospitality. I mean, it's all different kinds, a myriad of programs, and they all bring something unique to the table. For the fifth year student, they're just having to move into an academic or a higher, heightened academic mindset of graduate coursework. For the folks who have been out for a number of years, they need to bring their experience into the program and share that with the students who haven't had the professional experience that they've had. But the fifth year students can also teach those folks coming back into grad school the time management and how to get back into the academic mindset. So I don't think that there is one perfect student for the program, but one who is looking to advance their career either early on or the career that they're already in, the function that they're already in, or someone who's looking for that career change. Those are the two folks that would really benefit from our program.
Well, Seton, everything you shared with us, and you talked about the story being left untold, I appreciate you coming on here and sharing the story of the College Charleston, your story, just a lot of background on it. It like I said at the very beginning, and I know it means a lot to you, it means a lot to me that you would even take the time to talk with us and to share what amazing things are happening the College Charleston and in the city of Charleston itself. I look forward to, I'll be down there soon. Hopefully we can get together and meet one of the great restaurants on Springer Cannon Street, right? And partake, if you will. But I really appreciate your time and energy to this and you know, helping leading College of Charleston to many great things to come. But more than anything else, thank you for your time.
Eric, has been a pleasure chatting with you. Of course, I'll send you a calendar invite for a drink at a Charleston affair, all right?
Let's do it. One of my favorite things about CADSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CADSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CADSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. This episode is brought to you by the CADSource brand Podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com.